some of the staff who know me pretty well and who know how bashful I am about speaking told me I could probably tell you that just my standing up here is a perfect example of trusting in God, which is our topic for today. Just before I left England, well, in fact, 6 months before I left England, or was going to leave to come home to the States, I asked the Lord for some guidance regarding my plans when I would come home and for the certainty that He really did want me to come back to the States, because I was having a pretty good time over there. And so the Lord gave me at that time a verse that I had never really applied to my life necessarily before. I'd heard it for years, and it was always quoted by a lot of people, along with John 3:16, you know, in church meetings and so on. But I had never thought about it personally. And that verse is Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. And I imagine that a good number of you here today could quote that verse, and maybe we could quote it together. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge Him, and He shall direct thy paths. I think that was about 100%. So God promises to guide us if we trust Him with all of our heart, if we lean not to our own understanding, and if we in all our ways acknowledge Him. So on these three points, I'd like to hang a few thoughts this morning. And mostly this will be an amplification of my testimony. It'll be a lot about me, but I guess that's about the only person I can talk about in the sense of trusting in God at this point. First of all, God promises to guide us if we trust in Him with all of our heart, if we depend and rely and lean on Him with all of our innermost being. And I know, if you're anything like me, that when you hear that challenge, sort of trust in the Lord with all your heart, you want to with everything that's in you. But at the same time, you know that you don't. And you know that there are many times when you don't trust Him the way you want to. And I think one of the keys, as far as my life is concerned, in helping me to learn to trust in the Lord with all my heart, is in this thing of getting to know Him in the Word and through experience, and taking what I learn about Him in the Scripture and relating it to my daily life. I remember when I was a couple of years old as a Christian, and as I mentioned to you last night, I had every opportunity that anyone could ask from the very beginning. I studied the Word, STSs and all, and memorized the TMS in a rapid, quick fashion, and was totally involved in everything that would help me to grow as a Christian. And yet at the end of the 2 years, in my first year in college, I remember feeling sort of dissatisfied, and like I really didn't want to witness. I didn't feel the impetus to witness like I knew I should. And there was something wrong, and I didn't know what it was, though I had followed all the methods diligently and probably as disciplined as anyone at that age would be. So I'd go home from school and get down on my knees and by myself, and I'd say, Lord, what's wrong? And I did this for I don't know how long, a period of time. And I'd go to the Word, and I'd ask the Lord, what was the matter? And finally, He showed me a verse, another verse that you all know, Psalm 37, 4 and 5. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and He shall give thee the desires of thine heart. And it hit me just as plain as if the Lord were right there speaking to me, which He was, really, through His Word. But He was telling me, Jan, don't delight in the little verses, and don't delight in the Bible studies themselves, or don't delight in the navigators as such, or all the fun and all the rallies and all these things, but delight in Me as a person. Find your joy in Me and look for Me in these things. And it just changed my life totally. I looked over my memory verses and I thought, well, now what is there about You in this verse, Lord? And things stood out to me that had never stood out to me before, because I was thinking about other things in relation to the verses. And I think this set me off on the right path for the rest of my life, in the sense of pointing me to the person of Christ and for looking to the idea of looking to Him in everything. And it's so easy to get off, as you all know. And you've probably experienced the same type of thing. And I don't know about you either on this other score, but I don't automatically trust anybody, especially with all my heart. I think that takes that means a lot. And I have to get to know a person and know what they're like and know what they think about me and sort of be with them and do things with them. And then I can trust them and put my confidence in them. And the same thing is true with the Lord. And I just want to mention three things, three characteristics of the Lord, especially that have helped me to trust Him. And George has mentioned these, I don't know how many times already, but I'll just mention them particularly in relationship to my own life. First of all, well, the three things are His care and His sovereignty and His goodness. And of course, there are a lot of other things, His faithfulness and so on. And I feel like I can trust in someone when I know that they care for me. And the perfect person I think of in this regard is my mother. I've often said that if I don't know if anybody else loves me besides the Lord, I know my mother does. And we correspond every week, and I tell her everything that I'm thinking and all that I'm doing and all that. And I do this, I trust her with these things, because I know she cares for me, and I know she's interested. And this is really an example, I think, for a person to be such that we can trust them, and for us to be the kind of people that people can trust in and share things with and not feel as though we're going to get sort of criticized or preached at or everything all the time, every time we would share the things of our hearts. And I think the same thing is true with the Lord, as far as our knowing that He cares for us helps us to trust Him. 1 Peter 5:7, casting all your care upon Him. Why? Because He cares for you. And we need to feed our mind on this thought that He cares for me. Psalm 139:17-18 says, how precious also are thy thoughts unto me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I would count them, they are more in number than the sand. And it really warms my heart to think of the fact that the Lord thinks about me all the time. That there's right now and all through the day and all the time He's thinking about me. And if you haven't done that, just make it sort of a project to, when you feel sort of alone or like nobody cares or whatever, just let yourself think, well, the Lord is thinking about me now. He says so. It's not, I don't feel like it maybe, but He is, because the Word says so. And it really does warm your heart. And the second thing is His sovereignty. And it helps me to trust the Lord when I dwell on the fact that He knows the end from the beginning. And oftentimes I just think, Lord, You know the end from the beginning. You know exactly what is happening right now. In big situations and in little situations, this is true. I remember one time when I was rooming with and living with someone that I didn't really think liked me. And this was earlier in my Christian life when I was still having a hard time, as I do now, sometimes accepting myself. And I didn't feel at home with her. I didn't feel like I thought she maybe liked the girl she lived with before better than me. And so I was having a little bit of a struggle in regard to this. And the Lord gave me James 1:2-4 at that time. And it's been one of my standbys ever since. And in the Phillips it says, when all kinds of trials and temptations crowd into your lives, my brothers, don't resent them as intruders, but welcome them as friends, realizing that they come to test your faith and to produce in you the quality of endurance. And the Lord knew about this. It wasn't a mistake that I had this roommate or that she had me as her roommate. And the Lord began to teach me a little bit of overcoming love, of learning to come out of myself and love someone whether I thought that they loved me or not. And I'm sure you know what that is. Sometimes that how difficult it is to just reach out to somebody if you're not sure what they think about you. And I think that was sort of the beginning. Because prior to this situation, actually, I'd never experienced anybody not liking me, sort of, you know. And so it was sort of a shock. Not that I'm that likable, but I'd never been aware of it. And I think the Lord had something to teach me in this thing of overcoming love. But the Lord knew about this, and it wasn't a mistake. And sometimes in little things, when I don't get to go where I want to go, or I don't get to be with the people that I love, I don't. When there seems like there's a lot of pressure and so on, if I can just say, well, Lord, you knew about this before the foundation of the world, it makes it not seem so big and out of proportion. But it's all part of his plan. Another verse that is probably one of my very favorites is Job 23:13-14 in this regard of sovereignty. And if you take it, if you haven't thought about it, take it sometime and really make it, think about it. It says, but he is in one mind, and who can turn him? And what his soul desireth, even that he doeth. For he performeth the thing that is appointed for me, and many such things are with him. And you can't say that verse over very many times in thinking in terms of God as being sovereign, and he knows what he's doing, and he's performing. You can't say that very many times without having a real sense of security and confidence and of trust in the Lord. And then the last thing on these characteristics is his goodness. I don't know about you, but there's a little voice sometimes that says to me, God doesn't want you to have what's good for you. He wants to hold out on you. He isn't interested. He doesn't want the best. He wants to sort of give you a hard time. And this is, of course, not true. And this is the voice of the enemy, but a lot of times we don't realize it. And we even get the feeling, like George was talking about, you know, facts, faith, and feeling. We even get the feeling sometimes along with this that God is against us. Rather than the scripture said he's for us. But I do a lot of times get the feeling that he's against me. When the facts are that God loves to give good things to his children. You know, Matthew 7:9-11. And if you just think about that, he loves to give you good things. Every good and every perfect gift comes down from the Father above. And it's just his joy to give you the things that you want. And I suppose all of you know Psalm 84:11. The Lord God is the sun and shield. The Lord will give grace and glory. No good thing will he withhold from them that walk uprightly. And that's a fact that we can stand on and believe. And Romans 12:2 says, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. How many times have you thought about that verse and thought, well, is God's will really good, acceptable, and perfect? I wonder if it really is. And when I was asked to go to England a few years ago, I didn't want to go. And it was a period of several months that I sort of struggled with the decision to go. And I think that I went on the basis of this verse, whether I felt like it or not, that God's will is good and acceptable and perfect. And it was, you know. I got there, and I really had three of the most wonderful years of my life. And the Lord knew that it was good and acceptable and perfect, but my ideas about what's good, acceptable, and perfect. And if I can just believe and step out when he shows me that this is what he wants me to do, then I find out that his will is good, acceptable, and perfect. So, in order to trust the Lord with all of our heart, I think we need to get to know the Lord, what he's like, these things of his care and his sovereignty and his goodness and his faithfulness, and really apply these things in relation to our situations. We can know them in our heads, and they can be facts, but until they become part of our daily experience, until we relate them to things, they are just so much facts. And I think that this is what makes, to me, the Christian life exciting, is the fact that what the Lord says relates to my life every day, and that it's not just a boring effort of trying to go about doing things I don't want to do or whatever, but it's relating the scriptures to my life. Secondly, God promises to guide us if we lean not to our own understanding, if we don't rely on our own ideas. I think we either trust the Lord on one hand, or we lean to our own ideas. We can't do both at the same time. We can't try to figure everything out and decide what's right and so on our own, and at the same time be trusting the Lord with all of our hearts. And this is so a competition in a way, this thing of our own minds trying to figure out how God's going to work this out or how it's going to develop for our good or whatever. And why can't we lean to our own ideas? Well, I'm sure you all know from your own experience. Jeremiah 17:9, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. And our hearts are can lead us astray as fast as that. They are corrupt and selfish and deceitful, and there's nothing good in us. And if we try to figure these things out, we just go around in circles sometimes. Proverbs 14:12 says, there is a way which seemeth right unto a man. And it's true, a lot of times you know from your own experience that this way seemed right to you, seemed like the right thing, but it wasn't. Proverbs 16:9 says, a man's heart deviseth his way, but the Lord directeth his steps. Sometimes our heart sort of tries to figure out and devise and work it around, but the Lord is the one who should direct our steps. And by this, I don't mean that we just throw away our thinking patterns or never think. I think a lot of times there is this thought that if you trust in the Lord, you just don't think about things. You just trust. And Dawson Trotman used to say that the Lord gave us a big leading when he gave us a brain. And I think this is true. And he used to always point at people, are you thinking, are you thinking, are you thinking? And this was a big emphasis with him, that we use the brain power God has given us. And I personally, when I make big decisions, and even sometimes with little ones, I make this for and against list. You know, I take a piece of paper and put for and against, and then I write down all the things that are for this thing and all the things that are against it. And sometimes one side is really bigger than the other, and I think, oh, that's the leading. But that's where I have to be careful, that I don't lean to my own understanding and what I figured out there, but I still commit it to the Lord. Because it might be that the 2 points on this for side are much greater in the Lord's eyes than all these things on the against side. So I can't decide according to how many things are on each side whether this is God's will. I have to just commit that to the Lord. And I've discovered that I don't know what's good for me, like I've mentioned before. I think I know. Like I thought going to England wasn't maybe the best thing for me. But that wasn't true. And then I remember I was when I was thinking of where I was going to invest my life and so on, I was thinking about Young Life. As I mentioned to you, we had Young Life in our high school, and it seemed really exciting working with teenagers, and there was such a need, and it was sort of glamorous and everything. I went to a Young Life training camp and thought, well, that would be the thing for me. But I wasn't absolutely positive, but it seemed like a good thing. Finally, the Lord gave me 1 Corinthians 12:18. But now hath God set the members in the body, everyone according to the ways it pleases him. It's not exactly the way that verse goes. But he has put us in the body, and we may be interested in different things, but that doesn't mean he's gifted us to do that, whatever that is. Like, I don't think he gifted me to work with teenagers. And I didn't know that, but I think he knew that, and he just made it plain to me that that wasn't where he called me. And one time after I'd had about a year of training in a girls' nav home, I thought, well, now I'm really going to go and help girls, you know. And then I was asked to go work in a servicemen's center, of all places. And I thought, well, you know, this doesn't make sense. Here I have all this training, and then to go work in a servicemen's center for a couple of years. What is this? How does this fit into anything? And I struggled with that one for a couple of months. And then the Lord gave me Isaiah 54:2. Enlarge the place of thy tent, and let them stretch forth the curtains of thine habitations. Spare not, lengthen thy cords, and strengthen thy stakes. Enlarge the place of thy tent, and let them stretch forth the curtains of thine habitations. And the Lord just wanted me to expand. He didn't want me to have just one thing I could do, but that I could do something else in addition. And he wanted to do something in my life, I think, particularly in my situation. He wanted, this is sort of private, but he wanted to teach me how to get along with fellas, sort of, because of my background and everything. I didn't have any brothers, and my father left when we were young and so on. And he wanted me to learn something that I didn't realize I needed. I did, I suppose, but I wouldn't think of it as a big major thing because I was all hot and working with girls. So he knew what was best, but I didn't. And then different times, and I'm sure you've had this experience too, you thought that a certain fellow was maybe just the one for you, you know, and you've prayed about it and everything, and you thought, well, he should be nice. And then in one way or another, the Lord has said, no, this isn't the one. And if you had had your choice at the time, you would have said yes like that. But here again, our hearts aren't able to guide us, and we need to know the guidance from the Lord. So we can't lean to our own ideas because our ideas are very changeable, and we know how fickle and uncertain we are. And then thirdly, God promises to guide us if we acknowledge Him in all our ways. If we recognize His authority over all our plans and behavior. And back to England again. This time, it was coming home. I had learned things going over, and I learned things coming back. As I mentioned, I asked the Lord for some special guidance regarding my coming home. I loved everything in England. The girls' work over there is wonderful. I had terrific friends. I love my job and all that. And I couldn't figure out what I was going to do when I came back to the States. I tried to figure out who needed a secretary at the Glen, and I couldn't think of anybody who needed a secretary. And I thought of going to an area, and I couldn't really settle on any area that I was interested in. And then I started meditating, as I mentioned, on Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. And I came up with my own sort of paraphrase, which I've shared a little bit with you already, of depend on the Lord with all your innermost being, without relying on your own ideas. Recognize His authority over all your plans and behavior, and He will guide you. And this last part, recognize His authority over all your plans and behavior. And so I said to the Lord, Lord, okay, You're in charge of me. You're my authority over everything I do. And as long as I kept this before my mind, I had peace in the next few months before I was to come home. This, as I mentioned, was 6 months before I was to come home. And then 4 months after, the Lord had given me this verse and this certainty that He was going to guide me. I got a letter from Jim Downing asking me if I'd be his secretary here at the Glen. And this was certainly a wonderful answer to my prayer, because I don't know that there's anyone I'd rather work for here on the Glen than Jim Downing. And I've probably learned as much from him spiritually as anyone else that I know. I find that my will is my biggest problem, or one of my biggest problems, in this thing of submitting to the authority of the Lord or to anyone. And this will of mine fights against the authority of people and against the authority of the Lord. And Jesus experienced this in a way, although we don't know the fullness of it, but in Luke 22:42, He said, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. And I've learned something of what it is to just tell the Lord, Lord, I want this thing, whatever it is, or I don't want this thing. But nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. And there's such a pressure taken off and such a joy when you can say to the Lord, honestly, specifically what it is that's bothering you that you want or don't want or whatever, and then say along with it, not my will, but thine be done. And my will, I feel sometimes just surging up. You know, I want this thing right now, no delay, please. And it's just a terrible frustration sometimes that comes. And I need then, I know when this happens, and I need then at that moment, which I don't often do it right away, but I need to confess it to the Lord and say, Lord, I don't have to have this thing right now. I do have felt this way. And then to say, not my will, but thine be done. And this isn't easy, as you know. I have a poem here that called The Exchange of Wills. I want my heart so cleared of self that my dear Lord can come and set up His own furnishings and make my heart His home. And since I know that this requires each morning while it's still, I slip into that secret room and leave with him my will. He always takes it graciously, presenting me with his. I'm ready then to meet the day in any task there is. And this is how my Lord controls my interest, my ills, because we meet at break of day for an exchange of wills. And I like that, that we meet for an exchange of wills. And I give him my will, and he gives me his. And I think when I fail is when this doesn't happen, and I don't make this transaction with him in the morning and through the day. Now, I want to tell you about a few things that are impossibilities to me, but things in which I'm learning to submit to the authority of the Lord and to trust him to help me with. These things are waiting, accepting myself as I am, leading other girls, giving of myself, and rejoicing in the Lord. Quite a list. I might not get to all of them before the end of the time. But to me, waiting, as it goes along with my will and so on, it's an impossibility, and it never gets any easier. I used to have the idea that maybe when I grew up as a Christian, some of these things would get easier, you know? But waiting doesn't seem to get any easier. It seems to be something that is particularly prevalent in young people, and when we're young and we want to just move out, you know, and so on. But it also has a real part in our lives when we get a little bit older. Isaiah 30:18 says, "Therefore will the Lord wait." So he waits that he might be gracious unto you. And how's the rest of that verse go? "Therefore will the Lord wait, that he may be gracious unto you. Therefore will he be exalted, that he may have mercy upon you. For the Lord is a God of judgment. Blessed are all they that wait for him." So when we wait for him, we get blessings. And the word is just full of all this about waiting on the Lord and not rushing ahead and running into things that where we don't have to make a decision right away. I suppose you've all heard of Dr. Raymond Edmond, who was the president of Wheaton College, and he's written a book that you may have read called The Disciplines of Life. And one of the chapters is called The Discipline of Delay, and I've read this chapter over and over, and I've memorized some of the phrases in it, actually. And a couple of them have stood out to me. The delay that prepares and instructs, saves time, never loses it. The delay that prepares and instructs, saves time, never loses it. We think, oh, we've got to do this now because, you know, we better get moving. But if we can realize that if it's the Lord's delay, that it's preparing us and instructing us, and it will save time in the long run, we'll be a better person when we come to that situation, whatever it is, because the Lord will have taught us what he wants us to know. And the other one is, delay never thwarts God's purposes. Rather, it polishes his instrument. I think this is the same idea. Delay never thwarts God's purposes. Rather, it polishes his instrument. And that's what we want to be, instruments that are polished and ready for the task that he has for us. And if there's a delay, that's of him. It will make us a better person. As I mentioned to you, I went to this servicemen center to work. And I went for 2 years. But then at the end of the 2 years, there was no one to replace me for some reason, in the sovereignty of God. And I was asked to stay another year. Well, I just couldn't imagine staying another year because I thought, I had it in my mind that the next step for me was Glen Eyrie and then overseas. And by that time, I was really getting impatient for, you know, getting overseas. And so I thought another year to wait to get to the Glen, and then I don't know how long I'll be there before, you know, I have to go overseas or get to go overseas. And I didn't know how I could do it. It seemed impossible to wait. And I went to the Lord, and I knew I was supposed to stay there. And he gave me Psalm 113:3, which has been with me an awful lot since then. It says, "From the rising of the sun unto the going down of the same, the Lord's name is to be praised. And so the Lord wanted me to learn to every day, okay, Jen, you have this 365 days. We'll just learn now to live this day praising me and exalting me and living for me, and then do it tomorrow, and then do it the next day, and then those 365 days will go by, and I learned to do it. And that third year was the most precious year of the three, and it fulfilled, it was a fulfillment of the other two. The Lord gave me some more ministry. I learned more lessons from Him, and it was exactly the right thing. And if I had pushed my own will and fought it all the way, I never would have learned what He had for me. And so the Lord wants us to learn what it is to live in day-tight compartments. And this is the thing I'm trying to learn before the Lord now, is this thing of enjoying the Lord every day like a little child, putting my hand in His in the morning and going through the day and trusting Him to provide my needs and help me to do what He wants me to do. And then not think about tomorrow, like a little child doesn't, you know, demand a lot of, a little child who really trusts her father, I'd say, you know, just puts her hand in His and trusts Him to take care of her, and she doesn't worry about whether she's going to have food tomorrow or clothes, she just goes on. And this is what I think we can experience and what I'm trying to learn. Because when I try to think out past today, even, you know, a little bit from now, I can't, it seems sort of dark and uncertain, and I don't know what it is, but I can see today, and I can see this hour, and I can trust the Lord for it. And then the next thing is accepting myself as I am. And George has talked about this, and so I'm not going to go into it in a lot, in great detail, but sometimes it does seem like an impossibility to me. And I used to compare myself with my sister and with my friends, and I wish that I was like them, not like myself. And I think sometimes they wish maybe they were like me, but I couldn't see that. And early in my Christian life, this was the greatest thing the Lord helped me with, helping me to realize that I am a special jewel in His sight, that there's nobody like me. That really is encouraging in one way, that if I don't do the thing that the Lord has given me to do, no one else can do it. That there's no one else can do my job, whatever it is. And 1 Corinthians 12:18 again, but now hath God set the members in the body, everyone according as it has pleased Him. And He's made me the way that pleased Him, and He has a plan for me, and I don't have to be like my sister or like anybody else. I just have to be like me. And someone said, be yourself and let your whole self be God. And I like that. Be yourself and let your whole self be God. And if I just applied this, I would, I think, really have a lot more peace and trust. And then this thing of leading other girls. This to me, being the type of personality I am, it seems especially difficult. But I remember when I was a year old Christian, and we began to have a lot of other young teenagers come to the Lord through our young life clubs and so on. And so, since some of us were more advanced, you know, a year or so, well, we were asked if we would help some of these other girls. Well, I said, I don't have anything to help them with. You know, I'm only a year old as a Christian, and what can I do? And our NAV leader said to me, well, you teach them what you know right now, what you've learned, and then you keep growing, and they'll keep growing, and they'll never catch up with you, maybe. But you just teach them what you know now. You don't have to know everything, but you just teach them what you know now. And so all along the way since that time, the Lord has given me a girl or two wherever I've gone that I could invest my life in and share with, not in some big flashy way, but just as a friend. And however, I've always felt a bit inadequate in regard to it. And it always seemed easier if I just stuck to my typewriter. You know, if I just did the thing, if I just stuck to, well, if you wives or whatever, you just did your dishwashing and cleaned your house and so on, and didn't get involved in anybody's life, it seemed like life was pretty easy. But once you start caring about somebody else and getting involved in their lives, then you start having a few problems and things to worry about and pray about and so on. And it seems like there's the temptation to want to go back to just doing what you can do without any problem. And I think there's a basic test here of our relationship with the Lord. In John 21, you know, Jesus said, "If you love me, feed my sheep." And this comes to me often when I want to sort of not care about anybody and just live my little life and plan my time and, you know, that this shows that I don't really love him. And that I can prove to him that I love him partially by this concern I have for other people and taking those that he's interested in my heart and bearing their burdens and caring for them. And I can tell when my relationship with the Lord is right because I do care about other people. And when I'm not right with the Lord and I'm thinking about myself and so on, then I don't care about other people. I'm too busy with myself. So along with this thing of giving of myself, before I accepted the Lord, there wasn't any reason for me to care about anybody else or reach out to anybody. I didn't have any purpose to do it. But as soon as I accepted the Lord, as you've experienced, there's this joy in the Lord, and you just want everybody to know the Lord, and you can hardly wait to tell them. And this is what happened to me. And it overcame my shyness and my bashfulness and my self-centeredness. So the more we become involved in what we have to share and in the Lord and growing in him, we'll just come out of ourselves. And we can draw out our souls, like it says in Isaiah 58, 10 and 11. You know, draw thy soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul. Then shall thy light rise in obscurity, and thy darkness shall be as the noonday. And then this other promise. Sort of lost it right then, but. And the promise then, and the Lord shall guide thee continually, and satisfy thy soul in drought, and make fat thy bones. And thou shalt be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters fail not. And that's what we want to be, is like a watered garden whose springs of water fail not. And this is what the Lord will do. But speaking has always been difficult for me. Conversation is difficult. All these things involved with giving out. And yet the Lord has given me every opportunity to do this. At the moment now, for example, I'm one of the tour guides on the Glen. In fact, we have one tour a week every Wednesday afternoon. And guess who the tour guide is? Me. And like last week we had 19 cars with, you know, about 75 people. And I've been doing it now every week for a year. And so now, 19 cars, that's nothing, you know. And I just take it in my stride and it doesn't seem like anything. Sometimes I get a little embarrassed when I'm thinking about myself, or I wonder if I'm going to remember what to say or whatever like that. But in general, because it's something the Lord has given me to do, and I know that it's part of giving of myself, and it's one opportunity I have to sort of preach the gospel or share my testimony with people, since we don't have as many opportunities here as you do to get out with people. And so the Lord has just pushed me into this. This goes along with my job for Jim Downing. And I really love it, basically. Although the inside of me would just as soon sit at the desk instead of going out every Wednesday at 2:30. And then I have responsibility for some girls here on the Glen. So the Lord just pushes me into these things. And an opportunity like this, well, when I'm asked, my first thought is, somebody else can do it so much better than me. Why should I do that, you know? And then the Lord shows me that this is part of loving him. Matthew 20:28 says, "Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many." I think this is, I say a lot of verses are my favorite verses, but this one is to me the key to life. "Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many." And that the Lord came not to have people think about him or not to have them meet his needs, but he came to meet needs. And this, if I'm going to be like him, that he wants me to come to situations, not that people would be nice to me or people would do things for me, but that I could do something for someone else primarily. Not that people won't, and that I don't refuse anybody being nice to me, but that my objective, like when I go down to breakfast or when I go to work, the Lord would have me to think in terms of, oh, now what can I give to this situation? What can I do in caring for somebody? And to me, this is what makes life joyful. And I'm the most miserable person when I'm waiting for somebody to treat me the right way or do the right thing or think about me or, you know, all those little times when we sort of wish somebody would care. But we can just turn the situation around and think, well, now what can I do? And you've experienced this too, I know. So I don't have to get windy on it. And the last thing is this thing, sometimes it seems impossible to fulfill Philippians 4:4. You know, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. I know it seems impossible to me to do this, no matter what the circumstances are, to just rejoice in the Lord. And Paul, in the book of Philippians, I think, one of the biggest challenges to me in this regard, that he was in jail, you know, and experiencing what would seem to be the most unpleasant situation, and yet he rejoiced in the Lord, and he kept preaching to rejoice in the Lord. And in the Schofield notes before the book of Philippians, it says, Christian experience, God would tell us, or Paul would tell us, is not something which is going on around the believer, but something which is going on within him. So Christian experience is not something that's going on around us in our circumstances so much as it's what's going on in us, in our relationship with the Lord, and learning to rejoice in the Lord regardless of the circumstances, whether we have money or whether we don't have money, whether we have a car or we don't have a car, whether we have whether we're married or whether we're single. I think as far on that subject, that wives have to learn to rejoice in the Lord just as much as single girls do. And we on the single side think, oh, if we were just married, then we could rejoice in the Lord. But that isn't true. And I've talked to enough wives and lived in enough NAV homes and situations to know that our joy cannot be found basically in any person or any situation, that our joy has to primarily be in the Lord. And if we don't have it in the Lord, then when that situation or that person is gone, we realize what the situation is, and we know we can experience this, but we don't have to wait till this to happen to us. If we just learn this in our younger Christian lives, that the Lord wants us to rejoice in Him always. I think when I went to Germany, I was there for 3 years as a secretary, and as I look back over it, I know the Lord took me there to do some typing, you know, and play ping pong and entertain and pour coffee and so on, cook, but primarily for my benefit, He took me there to teach me what it was to rejoice in Him. And I think, how fantastic that the Lord, this means so much to the Lord, that I rejoice in Him alone, that He would take me across the sea and put me in a situation like this, just to teach me this, primarily this one thing, that I should rejoice in Him regardless of whether the ministry is going great or whether I'm getting just what I want or whether I have any money or anything, that I should rejoice in Him, not in His gifts and not in all these things, but in Him particularly. Psalm 16:11 is my favorite verse. Thou wilt show me the path of life. In Thy presence is fullness of joy. At Thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore. And I think about this verse all the time, that in Thy presence is fullness of joy. And I shared this with some of you, I think, a little bit in the devotional. But that right now, in the presence of the Lord, which we are, although we're not in His actual presence, that right now I can have all the joy that I will ever have in His presence. Because this is what He teaches, that in His presence is fullness of joy. And that I don't have to wait till I'm in this circumstance with this person, but I can experience His joy right now in this situation. Although this, all these things are impossibilities, yet they're miracles that happen in our hearts when we put ourselves under the authority of the Lord and under His will and trust Him and take Him at His word and apply it to our lives. Then these miracles happen and we don't understand. How can it be that I'm joyful when I wouldn't be in myself? but it's the Lord. So, in closing, we need to trust in the Lord with all of our heart and lean not to our own understanding. In all our ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct us. If we take what we know about the Lord and relate it to our everyday life, along this line, what I like to do after a period of time, say a year or 6 months or something, is to think back on what did I learn about the Lord in that time. And since this is my whole purpose in life, is to know the Lord. You know, the motto of the Navigators, to know Christ and to make Him known. This is my main purpose, is to know Him. Okay, well, how am I getting to know Him? And thinking particularly after situations, what did I learn about the Lord in this? And there are definite things that we are learning about the Lord. And then to not lean to our own understanding, try to figure everything out, but leave it to Him. And in the impossible things of life, recognize His authority and trust Him for it. And our faith will grow. And I just want to remind you one thing that also means a lot to me, is that the Christian life is pretty simple. Paul was concerned that, you know, that the Corinthians were getting life a little bit complicated. And so he said, 2 Corinthians 11:3, he said, "But I fear lest by any means, as the serpent beguiled Eve through his subtlety, so your minds should be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ." And he was concerned that the enemy was on the job to corrupt them from just the simplicity of living for the Lord. That it isn't a big complicated operation. But it's basically loving the Lord with all of our heart and loving our neighbor as ourself. I always come back to this, Matthew 22:37-39. That it's the Lord and then other people. And just giving myself to them. And, you might laugh at this, but you've probably heard of the KISS principle, have you? Leela Sparks, I remember her for this when I was in England. And I lived with them some of the time I was over there. And I fellowship with her a lot. And she was one for this KISS principle. And that's keep it simple, stupid. And I don't know about the stupid part. I can say that to myself. I won't say that to you. But just to say to myself a lot of times, keep it simple, stupid. Don't get all complicated and enmeshed with all these things. But just keep it simple. Sometimes I just write a KIS. In fact, the other day I took some prayer requests over to Leela when she was here. And I had written on there for her to pray for me. I just wrote KISS, you know. And two of her girls came in and they took the things. They're good friends of mine. And they read this. What's this KISS? You know, and so she explained to them what it meant. Because they were, of course, thinking about KISS, you know. I'm wondering who I was thinking about kissing. So I think it will be simple if we just put our hand in the Lord in the morning and give Him our worries and our cares and then walk with Him, trusting in Him with all of our hearts.